I'm talking again with Leila Abdel Rahim. It's always great talking to you. I'm going to include your CV, which has your information about where you went to school and your qualifications, just in case people think that's necessary to know. I know right now you're teaching at the University of Montreal, is that right?
Yeah, it's
Okay.
University of Quebec in Trois-Rivières, which is Three Rivers.
Okay.
It's a system of University of Quebec branches. One is in Montreal, in Three Rivers, in Chicoutimi. And its department, Department of Modern Languages and Translation, that trains future teachers.
Okay. And so
And
what I think is good for people to realize is that you have a very interesting critique of the education system and of the ways that people are taught, but you're also doing it from within the system. Like, you know the mechanisms, you know all of the different professional terms, and like, you're a professional, you have your PhD, you know what you're talking about. You're not just kind of making this up off the top of your head. You've spent years and years researching, studying, doing field studies, things like that. You've written several books.
Yeah.
And I want to make that clear from the beginning, because I know, first of all, when people of color are speaking, we always have to prove ourselves even more to say, oh yes, we're worthy to speak on these topics. And also, the same thing goes for women, the same thing goes for people who are not, like, in the establishment, quote unquote. So I just want to make it clear that you are not a person who is just like, oh, I have these ideas and we're just randomly talking about this. Like, you've spent a long time in the academy, discussing these ideas with other people and getting your ideas out there. So I just want to make that clear from the beginning, because I know some people may listen to this interview and say, what do you mean schools are not good, and what do you mean that education is not the most wonderful thing in the world, and that teachers are not these perfect deities? And there's a lot of sacred cows involved, I think, in this discussion that
Absolutely.
people might have to confront. So but before we spoke, I kind of sent you that information about the girl in North Carolina, or was it South Carolina? I mean, it's all the same to me.
Yeah.
But she was sitting in class, and she was on her phone, and I guess the teacher said to her, hey, can you put your phone away or something? And she ignored him and just, decided not to put her phone away. And so instead of continuing to teach the class, I mean, it's not like she was, talking on the phone, she was like texting on her phone. Instead of continuing class or just writing her up, he calls the school police, and a police officer comes in, and he goes up to the girl and asks her to get up from her seat. She doesn't get up from her seat, and so he then proceeds to put her in a chokehold, grab her, pick her up, and literally throw her like halfway across the room. And I'm kind of going through this scenario because it reminds me very much of a scene from Roald Dahl, and I think the book was Matilda, where there's like a principal who's like a terror. I think her name is Trunchbull, and she's like a very strict disciplinarian who's feared in the whole school. And she takes a little girl by her pigtails, picks her up, and swings her around over her head and throws her. And that is like a very kind of comical yet scary moment in the book. And then we see this incident happen in real life, and we see people saying, oh yes, she deserved it because she was being disrespectful, or she was not complying. I was wondering at first, like, oh my God, how can people look at this situation and say, oh, that's okay, or like, she deserved it somehow? But then I thought back to your critique of this, and I realized, wait, people have actually been like almost literally brainwashed into accepting violence against children in a certain way through what we read in literature all the time. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah. Well, absolutely. I wouldn't even use the word brainwashed because, well, there is brainwashing definitely because there's an intentionality to the narrative that is being produced, the dominant narrative that legitimate certain practices and attitudes. Then there's the problem of the teachers. The teachers are overworked. There's in academia, a lot of the professors are actually adjunct, part-time, like me, basically. You know, I teach every now and then when there is a class, they call me back. Doesn't pay for anything, and the students feel this hierarchy. They don't know it. They think all professors are the same. They feel that there are certain professors that don't have the institutional support, that they are kind of the underdogs. And so the students also kind of gang up. And usually it's women of color who kind of happen by, like me, into academia, who've had to suffer and overcome so much, like you said in your introduction, to prove ourselves, you know. The research has to be impeccable, you know, everything has to be sourced, and still, you know, oh, like, now you're overqualified, or this, or that. And so, and the students feel this. And the students know unconsciously how society works on class and classification. The whole method of building knowledge in education is based on classification. And classification, I talk about that in my introduction to the new book, The Routledge of Wild Children, Children's Literature, Domestication and Social Foundation, Narratives of Civilization and Literature, that came out this March in 2015. So I talk in the introduction, which is available on Play Google for free, about how important the epistemological classes, how you know in science, the scientific kind of gaze on the functions and the criteria that make a certain class, that is then transposed to how you see those classes of creatures, of beings, living, non-living, who becomes a resource for whom in this understanding of a world that's coexisting as a food chain, in a predatory food chain. You kind of legitimate predation, you legitimate classes, it becomes the foundation of how you're going to look at each other, because within the human society, within the civilized order, the reproduction of the class that is going to be consumed as labor, as, if you will, the technology for the predator, or the class that reproduces the labor, okay, the women, you start inventing classes that are not that important. I mean, they exist, like female females or males exist in the wilderness, right? But there are different ways of reproducing culture and reproducing bodies that are being then kind of ignored by highlighting the gender aspect within our civilization. So who's going to reproduce? You domesticate crops, you domesticate gender. Okay, this is the reproductive class. Within the classificatory system, these attitudes legitimate violence and respond to a certain socioeconomic paradigm that connects it, that binds us all together. So the teachers, when they complain that the students are disrespectful and that they are the class that is assigned the dirty job of reproducing a narrative in which they don't fully understand themselves, they don't fully understand the implications of what it is they're teaching or how they're teaching. And sometimes the individual motivations might be noble, you know, like I want to bring light and empowerment to the students. But within a system that already has, I mean, the students are sitting in the classroom. Class. We're back to the same epistemological construction of categories that are alienated, separated by certain intrinsic characteristics, essentialist characteristics. In the US, when you look at the classroom, it is so obvious that the segregation of the labor, the free labor class, and the management, the predator class, are separate. The segregation of schools, in spite of the attempted, some of them are noble, some of them are cynical, to reintegrate society, it's still reenact the system, the epistemological classificatory system still reenacts itself violently, because it has to be violent. And so when the teachers go into the classroom, regardless of their motivations, to me that is not important in itself. And then we look at the students. And so the students are there as orphans, abandoned by the parents, regardless of whether the parents were forced into it, coerced into it, or they believe that this will be the best that they can do for their kids. Put the kids in the hands of these strangers, some of whom want the best for the kids, some of them have given up, some of whom are cynical, and some of whom are abused by the predatory system itself, but they don't see how their role in the abuse of the children is ever so greater. That the reproduction of the predatory relationships, regardless of their intent, is just so impeccably mechanized just by the presence within that structure.
I never sorry to interrupt, but I when you're speaking now, I'm thinking of this scene from South Carolina and the teacher just standing there passively while this police officer is
the teacher calls.
He calls him, and it's almost like, okay, I might say to myself, oh, I called this the security police to remove this unruly child, but wait a minute, you know, he's choking her, he's throwing her, he's putting his knee into her back, and she's like screaming. Like, at what point do you intervene? But this teacher doesn't intervene. He stands there and watches. And he's a black man as well, which is also interesting to note. He's watching a white man savage a young black girl, and he's a black man standing there in his role as a teacher, not doing anything, just watching.
In fact, being responsible for having called in the first place.
Right.
Because at this point, of course, the taking for granted the foundation of these relationships. Like, again, how are you going to force a working class to produce labor for the class that's going to predate on that labor, right? So you go step by step, and you see that at every point in the development of civilization, policing the right of the exploiter, of the, you, like, this is a, if we're going to talk about symbiotic systems, like, you know, taking it from nature, mutualistic systems, agricultural civilization is a parasitic system. So in a way, the guard who was then coerced into guarding the interests of the parasite or the predator has always responded to the interests of that parasite or that predator. Okay? And then, so it's like, and you look at it anywhere. You look at the slave trade, like the birth of the police in Europe and the birth of the police in North America. They responded to the, in Europe, the police was born to protect the from the peasants, the overlords. So it was to contain the serfs originally, military to defend from the invasions of other lords with their military and the interests that, you know, of taking over their serfs. And in North America, it was slave relations, right? So you bring people, you need to contain the indigenous population, and you need to bring people, kidnap them, and force them to work, and you guard that classification, that class system in place, regardless of whether the narrative seems to have changed. But the foundational premises, the interests of the socioeconomic relations are there. And so, and it doesn't matter at this point, the color of the actor, the color of the skin or the ethnic background of the actors within that system, ultimately we end up responding to the structure of that system. And so the fact that the teacher is black, he belongs to the replicator of class, the class that replicates the memes and the formula of how we're going to handle and how we're going to categorize and what are we going to expect from each other. The fact that the student was on a cell, yes, it is disruptive. Yes, she should have been paying attention in ideally to the class, to the lecture. But then nobody questions why are students feeling let down by the system. If the lectures were responding to her interests, she would be all ears.
Right.
So they're not responding. Something else is responding to her need in the immediate future and in the shattered reality where even the dominant white class know that their children will be poorer than their parents, and their parents are the ones who have had access to the resources, the symbolic and material capital on this continent. What are we going to, like, what do you even expect of people who were brought here with nothing, were rewarded no compensation for their suffering, their capital, family structures completely destroyed, their surviving all the love and integrity that they can muster as much as they can, responding to a reality that fails them daily. Nobody questions the foundation of what is in store for the children. And race and gender are so critical in this classificatory system. It's really inevitable that we go beyond who is responsible for what. The cop, yeah, the cop is doing his job. Historically, his job was to violate. His job was to suppress rebellion. It is, you don't need to articulate that. That is his job. So when the teacher calls a police officer, regardless of whether the police officer, I can't speak, you know, I can speak only, you know, from what I see on the video, right? Maybe in his mind he's doing his job. I mean, there are some black students going out, like, demanding the police officer be reinstated, right?
Right.
So maybe they all see, like, we don't know how they rationalize in this moment their roles in their relationships. Obviously, they're much more complicated than that. But precisely, it's these complications that need to be addressed by addressing the foundation of our reason for existence as a teacher within the classroom of schools that domesticate the children and reward them unequally and punish them unequally based on gender and race and class, and the policing that has historically responded to keeping this system intact with the rape as the basis of the production of domesticated resources, human or non-human, as murder of pests and those who threaten the economic order, and the general continuation of exploitation and predation, the predatory narrative.
I'm really glad that you brought up the students who were protesting for the reinstatement of this officer, because it really points towards how these things you're talking about have been so internalized, and people like accepting their own oppression and accepting that physical violence is actually totally okay. And there's a video that we spoke about that I like to play for people listening, and it's from an NBC affiliate. I'm not sure what the city is, but it's called Brenda's Last Word. And Brenda is going to give us her thoughts on the situation that happened in South Carolina, and I'm just going to play that, and then we're going to discuss it in a few minutes.
Okay.
It's the age everybody's recording, so now Officer Fields is fired. No question, he was unprofessional. His behavior, absolutely unacceptable. But don't miss the bigger picture here. The discipline problem in our schools is out of control, not on the part of resource officers, but the kids. Our outrage collectively over that video is rooted in part, I think, to our naivete about what actually goes on in schools all the time. Talk to those on the front lines, and you'll learn that video isn't as black and white as it may seem. Just about any teacher in a big city public school will tell you, their biggest daily issue in the classroom is that kids have no respect for authority. And when a student gets aggressive, the teacher has no power to do anything about it. And the students know that. So they have no incentive to back down when a teacher asks them to, no incentive to follow orders. In the video, we just see the reaction. We don't see the action that precipitated it. Note what everybody else is doing in that classroom. Just sitting there. No, ooh, oh no, he didn't. You wrong. No, none of that. Because the kids know this wasn't one-sided. That video gives us only one dimension. Now again, let me be clear. I think the officer abused his power. What he did was not okay. But don't get it twisted. That's not the problem in our schools. Teachers and those students who are truly trying to learn are burdened every single day with the albatross of disrespectful, mouthy, misbehaving kids who have no intention of following the rules and will defy anyone who tries to make them. I challenge you, talk to some teachers. They'll tell you. It's a war out there, and the teachers are losing.
So to me, Layla, the interesting thing about this video was that her point of view is actually not uncommon, and that's been the most astounding thing to me about this whole situation. Many people agree with her 100%. I've had friends on Facebook and on other social media that I never would have believed had these opinions come out and say, well, you know what, we don't have the whole story. She must have done something to deserve this. Yes, what the officer did was wrong, but, you know, she kind of brought it on herself by not obeying. And I'm listening to these things, and I'm saying, where is this coming from? How can people be so almost sociopathic, you know?
The narratives of legitimation, and we're talking about, say, like, well, you mentioned Roald Dahl, right? The children's book. Mm-hmm. Well, both, actually, all Roald Dahl's books are really problematic. We talk about the media, actually on CNN. They also had a similar discussion at what point and who has the right to intervene, and how do you, like, you know, should you call the police officer to keep order in the classroom? And then this constant, and it's constant. It's not only in this case. It's even more horrific in the cases where the children are murdered or raped, and you hear, well, what, you know, what did they do to basically to ask for it, you know? If they only, there's a black man recently is making rounds on the media, on the social media, who talks about how he did everything right, and when the police officer stopped him, and he ended up not being shot.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, okay, this is the narrative of legitimation that legitimates violence and makes it actually invisible. It becomes visible only when it threatens the class that owns the monopoly over violence, over the right to kind of to impose violence on others. Okay, so in the schools, in the children's literature, you get like over and over, like from the very simplistic nursery picture books with, oh, like, you know, little whoever, Caillou, or little, you know, Mary went to a farm, and what did she see? And she saw these little lambs, and she saw those piggies, and she saw those cows, and what are piggies for, and what are cows for, and what is this for? And it's like, it reinforces the idea that the right to use and control those creatures and to define, to categorize and classify them and imprison them, therefore, and consume them is a normal, happy story of life on this earth.